Good morning and welcome to Catholic Views. I'm Jerry Klein. Thanks for joining us. Today on the program, Dr. Chris Bergwald is going to fill us in on the convocation of Catholic leaders. A delegation from the Diocese of Sioux Falls attended that just a few weeks ago. He's going to fill us in on what that was like and maybe a little bit about what it might mean for our diocese going forward. So stick around for that. Gene Young will have news for us in just a bit. First, the readings for this Sunday. Emily Leadham with the first and second reading, and Deacon Bill Radio with the gospel.
The reading from the Book of Wisdom. There is no God besides you who have the care of all, that you need show you have not unjustly condemned. For your might is the source of justice. Your mastery over all things makes you lenient to all. For you show your might when the perfection of your power is disbelieved, and in those who know you, you rebuke temerity. But though you are a master of might, you judge with clemency, and with such lenience you govern us. For power, whenever you will, attends you. And you taught your people by these deeds that those who are just must be kind, and you gave your children good ground for hope, that you would permit repentance for their sins. The word of the Lord. A reading from the letter of St. Paul to the Romans. Brothers and sisters, the Spirit comes to the aid of our weakness, for we do not know how to pray as we ought. But the Spirit himself intercedes with inexpressible groanings, and the one who searches hearts knows what is the intention of the Spirit, because he intercedes for the holy ones according to God's will. The word of the Lord.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. Jesus proposed another parable to the crowds, saying, "The kingdom of heaven may be likened to a man who sowed good seed in his field. While everyone was asleep, his enemy came and sowed weeds all through the wheat, and then went off. When the crop grew and bore fruit, the weeds appeared as well. The slaves of the householder came to him and said, 'Master, did you not sow good seed in your field? Where have the weeds come from?' He answered, 'An enemy has done this.' His slaves said to him, 'Do you want us to go and pull them up?' He replied, 'No, if you pull up the weeds, you might uproot the wheat along with them. Let them grow together until harvest. Then at harvest time, I will say to the harvesters, first collect the weeds and tie them in bundles for burning, but gather the wheat into my barn.'" The Gospel of the Lord.
And now with a look at news highlights from this past week from the Bishop's Bulletin, here's Gene Young.
Thanks, Jerry. In the news this morning, Sister Terry Hoffman was recently installed as the 11th Prioress of Mother of God Monastery in Watertown. Sister Marlene Minard, outgoing Prioress, presented Sister Terry to Sister Joella Kidwell, President of the Federation of St. Gertrude, who administered the oath of office. As symbols of the office, Sister Terry received the sacred scriptures and the rule of St. Benedict. She'll be serving closely with her leadership team at the community. Sister Terry shared with those assembled that it'll take a lot of trust going forward. You can read and see more about the new prioress at Mother of God Monastery in the July edition of the Bishop's Bulletin in homes across the diocese right now and online at www.sfcatholic.org. In other news, Calista Gingrich testified before the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations this week for her confirmation hearing as President Donald Trump's nominee to be the U.S. Ambassador to the Vatican. Gingrich, who's 51, affirmed the administration's commitment to protecting human rights and religious freedom and responded to questions about refugees and the environment. Senator Ron Johnson, a Republican from Wisconsin, presided, introducing Gingrich and referencing her involvement with the Catholic Church. He noted that Gingrich was the organist for her local parish, St. John Catholic Parish, in her hometown of Whitehall, Wisconsin, and has been a longtime member of the choir at the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception in Washington, D.C. Calista is a lifelong Catholic and has been active in her faith for many years, Senator Johnson said. He marked her almost three decades of experience, that is, as a congressional staffer and subsequent work as president of Gingrich Productions, a company that produces documentaries, books, newsletters, and other materials related to history and public policy. Senator Johnson cited Gingrich's experience gained in producing a documentary film about Pope John Paul II's historic trip to Poland as evidence of her connections with and understanding of the Catholic community and the Vatican, calling her an ideal choice. After efforts to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act collapsed late this week in the U.S. Senate, Catholic healthcare leaders said they hope Congress will work together in small steps to fix flaws in the current legislation. 4 days earlier, Bishop Frank J. Duane of Venice, Florida, chairman of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops Committee on Domestic Justice and Human Development, had said the measure, a revision of an earlier draft, still did not have enough improvement to change our assessment that the proposal is unacceptable. The Catholic Health Association is pleased that the bill in the Senate will not go forward, said Sister Carol Keehan, a daughter of charity who is president and CEO of the association, adding, it would have had incredibly negative consequences for so many Americans. Dr. Stephen White, a pulmonary specialist in Ormond Beach, Florida, and chairman of the Catholic Medical Association Healthcare Policy Committee, said that because of the complexity of the healthcare legislation, he would hope people would see what happened when the Senate failed to secure the necessary votes for the healthcare repeal as a setback, not a failure. Philadelphia's ongoing struggle with opioid addiction has found an epicenter in the Kensington section of that city, where open-air heroin sales, drug usage, and overdoses have become commonplace. In response to public outcry, city officials and law enforcement have intensified patrols of heroin hotspots in the area. As a result, many of those who are addicted and homeless have sought shelter in other parts of the neighborhood. According to Father Liam Murphy of Mother of Mercy House in Kensington, Pennsylvania, several people recently took refuge in the former Ascension of Our Lord Church building. After the parish closed in 2012 due to low membership, the church was relegated to non-religious use by canonical decree and put up for sale. The property was sold to a real estate investor in 2014 for $800,000, even though it had a market value of $3.5 million, yet it needed at least $3 million in repairs, according to the Archdiocese of Philadelphia. The sale was one indicator of how far the church, which at one time was one of the largest in the city, had declined. The same could be said of its working-class neighborhood that today is one of the city's most troubled. The National Director of Priests for Life in New York welcomed a London court's decision allowing a U.S. doctor to go to England to examine a 10-month-old terminally ill British infant at the center of a medical and ethical debate. The baby, Charlie Gard, was born with mitochondrial DNA depletion syndrome, which causes progressive muscle weakness, brain damage, and respiratory or liver failure. It is typically fatal. The baby's parents, Chris Gard and Connie Yates, lost their legal battle to keep Charlie on life support and to then take him home to die. They also were denied permission to take the baby to the United States for evaluation and possible treatment. The couple had raised $1.8 million through crowdfunding to cover the cost. Doctors at London's Great Ormond Street Hospital said transferring the baby to a U.S. hospital would prolong his suffering. This week, England's High Court ruled he could be examined by a doctor of Columbia University in the United States. With a look at the news from this past week, I'm Gene Young reporting from the Bishop's Bulletin Newsroom.
Very good, Gene. Thank you much for the news. Let's move on to our interview. This morning on Catholic Views, we are joined by Dr. Chris Bergwald, back a few weeks now, actually, as people are hearing this from the Catholic Convocation for Leadership, I think, in the churches was the proper title.
The full title was the Convocation of Catholic Leaders, the Joy of the Gospel in America.
That's good.
Five times fast, Jerry.
That's good. Chris was there with a delegation from the Diocese of Sioux Falls, including Eric Gallagher and Deacon Chet and Colleen Cordell, BJ and Brandy Schaefbauer, and Bishop Swain was also there. This is an interesting gathering, Chris, something that really, in my recollection, has not happened in quite this way, at least for a long time, if ever.
Well, from what I don't know if I heard it or if I had read it, some of the preparatory material for the convocation, something like this, where it was leaders in the church from across the country, part of dioceses, parishes, religious orders, different Catholic organizations and apostolates. Something of this happened, as far as I can tell, last time in 1917.
Wow.
100 years ago.
Wow.
As World War I was coming to a close, I don't remember what it was prompted by, but 30-some dioceses at the time, I think, gathered together. And that eventually became what we now call the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops.
Okay.
But yeah, 100 years ago, there was a gathering like this.
So we want to talk about this, and it's very, very early. I want to stress that we don't really know... in a sense, the practicalities of what this is going to mean in the eventualities in our diocese. But the very moment of it, I think, is simply for the reason you just stated, it's really kind of a unique thing. It's worth talking about.
Yeah, just the fact that we had about 3,500 Catholic leaders, different roles in the church, come together under the guidance and direction and leadership of our bishops was that by itself. If you will, forget the content. Mm-hmm. That by itself was notable, that mm-hmm. that you had people from across the country, different roles. I ran into a young man who was from the Diocese of El Paso, Texas. He actually has seen some of the videos that we've done.
How about that?
And he was thanking us for them. But he's a college student who's in his parish choir in El Paso. And he wasn't really sure why he was invited, but he was invited to be part of his diocese delegation. Mm-hmm. So again, people from... Some people, like in our diocese, the Schaefbauers are active parishioners. Mm-hmm. They're not employed by any parish.
Right.
You mentioned the Cordells, Deacon Chet and his wife Colleen. She has currently no formal role.
Right.
So a lot of people like that.
Right.
It was just a great experience of people at different roles in the church gathered together, but with a specific focus.
Okay, let's talk about that now, the focus.
So I mentioned the subtitle was The Joy of the Gospel in America. So, Jerry, we've talked about the document from Pope Francis, The Joy of the Gospel, Evangelii Gaudium. We've talked about it before. The purpose of the convocation in many ways was to focus... have a focused conversation with leadership from the church across the country about missionary discipleship. That's a phrase, the term that Pope Francis uses in The Joy of the Gospel, the document, The Joy of the Gospel. And that's something that the bishops wanted us as leaders with them to discuss. What does it mean to be a missionary disciple in the United States? How can we deepen our own and then deepen the missionary discipleship of Catholics around us.
So we're bringing together people from very diverse places, very urban diocese, very rural diocese, very small, sometimes scattered in a sense like we are,
right.
A very, very large geography that we're dealing with. How do you bring that all together in a way that makes sense?
And that was part of a lot of discussion about the great diversity mm-hmm. of the church in the United States, in those ways, certainly cultural and racial diversity as well, was talked about and was very visible as well. By the way, one quick story on that, Jerry, if you don't mind.
Sure.
One of the beautiful things we had was in the evening. But one of the things I loved about the conversation, the convocation, Jerry, was great mix of panel discussions, breakouts, but we had mass every day and different devotions, morning prayer in the evenings. We had one evening was a holy hour. One evening was a praise and worship concert. One evening was a Marian devotion with a rosary said in various languages.
Mm.
I think it's Archbishop Thomas Wensky. I know it's Archbishop Wensky from Miami, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Led one of the decades of the rosary, and they did it multilingual. He did the first five Hail Marys of this decade in Creole.
Wow.
And the second five in Polish.
Wow.
I don't know too many people, Jerry, who know Creole and Polish.
That's an interesting mix.
But Archbishop Wensky did.
Wow.
Anyway, so great multilingual diversity as well.
Yeah.
So seeing that, and how do you have a conversation? But we all have the same heart. The human heart is the same, and we are all made for Jesus Christ, and we're all made for the Father through Him, and to love one another. So while there is that great diversity, there's as there always has been in the church, there's unity within that. And so for us to really focus on what does it mean to be a disciple, and then how do you be a missionary disciple? In fact, this convocation was born out of 8+ years ago, I think. The bishops are really trying to bring together a couple of different groups in the church that oftentimes are at loggerheads. And just specific, just for the sake of knowing the background, the pro-life community and the social justice community.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they shouldn't be in conflict or tension more. But that was a reality that the church has faced at a time. And so the bishops wanted, okay, this shouldn't be the case. Let's resolve this. Well, as they were trying to figure out, okay, how do we bridge this gap? Why is this gap here? How do we fix it? They realized this is at its heart about evangelization and catechesis or discipleship. And as they were, we need to get not just us, but we need to bring together leaders in the church to talk about. Yeah, maybe we started by talking about pro-life and social justice, but this is about missionary discipleship. And how can we all come together, have a conversation, and then take, this is the key, take that back home to our home diocese and deepen this move towards missionary discipleship.
Fascinating to me that you say this conversation about this gathering, in a sense, started almost 8 or 10 years ago. Yeah. In the meantime, the Holy Father comes on the scene,
right.
Writes this document, yep. Which then becomes
yep.
the focus.
The
way, if you will, for this conversation to happen.
Yeah, yeah. That's,
talk about the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, I was going to say, what a coincidence.
Yeah.
No, yeah, I mean, exactly, the Holy Spirit. You know, we the idea of discipleship and being on mission has always been there, but certainly Pope Francis has really called all of us as Catholics, all of us as Christians, to renew our own relationship with Jesus Christ, and then to bring that to those around us. That's what missionary discipleship is in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm. The way that Pope Francis talks about it, missionary discipleship, and the way he uses that term, can we relate to that in the sense of what our diocese has certainly begun and is maybe a ways down the road in terms of our own way of talking about discipleship?
Yeah, I definitely saw that in many ways. This is a conversation that we began a few years ago, as you just indicated, talking about what does it mean to evangelize? What does it mean to be a disciple? What is discipleship? And then bringing those together, what does it mean to be a missionary disciple? So it was encouraging to see sort of, in, if you will, a strategic vision that we've taken on, ratified, confirmed, in that at the national level, the U.S. bishops as a whole, not just Bishop Swain, all of the bishops really see this is an area that we need to focus on. What does it mean to be a disciple, and what is it to be a disciple in mission, or disciple mm-hmm. on mission?
Mm-hmm. And your sense as you were in touch with other delegates around, is that a newer concept for a lot of people?
For some, yes. For others, no, which was great to see too. I mean, just to be, it's not like we were
we're
the
not
first,
alone.
Or
yeah.
we're not, and we're definitely not alone. So it was great. And the great thing to me about that was those others who were already down this path as well, to see how they're doing it. I mean, that was part of the idea of having delegations. We were, the intention was for all of us there present to really be participants in this conversation in various ways. And so to hear how others are in their diocese and archdiocese, how they are embodying missionary discipleship, how they're inviting their fellow Catholics to live missionary discipleship was good, because there's more than one way to accomplish a goal. And so for us to hear and therefore test our own, okay, are there any tweaks that we can make to what we offer?
Well, and again, when you look at the diversity of the diocese, the needs, everyone is not going to come at it the same way. They can't.
No. Yeah. I mean, again, like one particular example, I really loved comments offered by the director, and the title was Evangelization and Catechesis or something like that, from the Archdiocese of Milwaukee in Wisconsin. I was really intrigued by what he's doing, and yet that is more of an urban diocese.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can't just replicate what they're doing. They can't replicate what we're doing. I had a great conversation with a couple of women counterparts who are in the Archdiocese of St. Paul, Minneapolis, doing very similar things to some of the things that we're doing. But again, as we learn from one another, we can't do things. It's not like I can't just take their recipe.
There's no template.
Yeah, exactly.
That fits
exactly,
perfectly.
Exactly. And even if there was another rural diocese that we're talking with, the Diocese of Sioux Falls is unique in its own way. Every diocese, you have to take the particularities of our people into account. Every diocese has to do that.
But what's common and what is the goal, of course, is to deepen that relationship with Jesus Christ for everyone in a particular diocese.
Exactly. For us to grow in it and then share it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm reminded there as I say that of that's the purpose for the Bishop Martin Marty Institute for the New Evangelization that Bishop established several years ago in my office, for me to grow in my own knowledge of the faith, and for me to know how to share that with other people. That's in many ways what many of us in the church have been doing for quite some time. Again,
yeah.
This is not brand new by any means,
right.
But again, heartening and encouraging to see this common language being used and a common vision.
Well, sometimes how we talk about things necessarily changes because, you know, the culture evolves, the things change. They aren't the same as they used to be. We have to try to find language that will connect with people.
And so it's how we can have the conversation across the country, but even in our own diocese. That's, to me, the gift of having really a diverse delegation, as we had from our diocese. Eric Gallagher and myself on staff, but the other four not on diocesan staff.
Right.
And not on parish staff, technically.
Right, right. But very involved, very active.
Absolutely, yeah.
Very active Catholic, very interested in furthering this effort.
Exactly.
Yeah. So again, we're not really talking about particulars today because we're not there yet.
Nope.
But important to talk about this gathering and really, I guess, maybe the broader potential for what it means, not just for our diocese, but for our church at large.
Yeah. For how can we, again, continue to live out this call that Pope Francis has given the entire church across the world? How can we in the United States, how can we in our own diocese further that call of missionary discipleship?
Were there other particular speakers that really spoke to you or that maybe, and I don't know if they were recorded or they're available, but if there was some in particular you would want to recommend for folks to listen to?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there were several plenary sessions or general sessions. We always have to use terminology that's unfamiliar to people, Jerry.
Of course we do. we're just talking about common language.
What is a plenary session? Well, it's just the general session.
It's everybody.
It's everybody.
It means everybody.
Fullness.
So there's everybody and then there's breakout sessions.
Yeah.
Where it's not everybody.
They had 22 sessions where not everybody was in every one. That's for sure. The plenary sessions, the masses, they were all recorded. I think they're all on YouTube.
Okay.
If you do a search for, again, convocation of Catholic leaders, you should be able to find YouTubes of those. The final plenary session, the final general session, Patrick Lencioni is a sort of a leader in organizational health in the secular world, but he's also a faithful Catholic.
Okay.
And he was speaking about what healthy organizations and healthy organization leadership teams look like. That was, to me, fascinating. Just to hear a perspective on what organizational health looks like. So I found that fascinating because it wasn't about theology. It was about about the demographics of the church. It was about leadership and healthy leadership. That, but then the capstone address was given by probably one of, if not my favorite, living theologian. Well, that's Pope Benedict. Sorry, we'll take that away. My second favorite, Bishop Barron.
Okay.
Bishop Robert Barron. He wasn't able to be there. He was supposed to be there, but he couldn't be there. But they set up that morning, they had set up a live stream. So he gave a presentation live, I presume from Los Angeles, which is where he's auxiliary bishop. And he just gave a fantastic address. Even though it was a distance video live, it was just a fantastic address. I really liked him. The opening mass with Cardinal Dolan. As Bishop said afterwards, Cardinal Dolan had been the president of the U.S. Bishops Conference for 3 years, and he had the bishops laughing all the time. And he had the congregation laughing. And I mean, he's got a great sense of humor. But
in a way that is making his point, right?
Exactly.
That's what I appreciate about him. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And
it's not just laughter, but there's a meaning behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he, in his homily, did a great job of setting the stage. This was the opening formal event for the convocation and just setting the stage for what we were going to be experiencing throughout the next 4 days.
Mm-hmm. Other highlights or other things that you want to make sure we talk about?
I touched on already what I loved, the diversity of experiences, if you will, the plenary sessions, the breakouts, mass every day, 3,500 people together. Beautiful artwork. Many of us are familiar with Magnificat, the monthly devotional. They provided a little 4-day devotional guide, just because we had, being an event of this sort, we use particular readings at Mass, and they produced that. A beautiful choir that was there. And then they also, somehow Magnificat got artwork on a video board that was just, it was, the masses were incredibly beautiful. To pull off those sorts of masses for 3,500 people every day was a beautiful thing. And then I mentioned the evening devotions or Marian devotion, Eucharistic, a concert with Matt Maher and Audrey Assad. Just a great variety of different things to do. One of my favorite things, though, Jerry, that I only experienced a few times in my life, I get to participate in a Eucharistic procession.
Hmm.
So there were over 2,000 of us who followed literally our Lord in the Eucharist being carried by Archbishop Laurie about a mile.
Wow.
mile through the streets of Orlando, Florida.
In the lovely, humid warm temperatures of Orlando.
Don't get me started.
In late June, early July.
Even at 8 a.m. in the morning, it was, humidity. Yeah. Thank you, South Dakota.
But what a witness.
Oh, it was incredibly powerful, incredibly moving, and it was a gift for me to be able to participate in.
Yeah. What do you want people to know? What do you want people to be thinking about as we wrap up? There's only a couple of minutes left, but as we wrap up, and I know you have takeaways, but what should we have as takeaways?
So we've talked already about how in our diocese we've been using this language and the idea of discipleship for the last several years, intentional discipleship, missionary discipleship, whatever you want to call it. This is not just a fad. This is at the national level— internationally, really, but the church in the United States has taken up the call of Pope Francis to form missionary disciples, to ourselves be formed as that, and then for us to encourage others. So when you hear at your parish from your priest or your DRE or person next to you in the pew about discipleship, this is something, I don't want to be too dramatic here, but it's something big.
Pay attention,
yeah. Because this is something that our bishops, the successors of the apostles, are not just asking, but they're leading us in this path of what does it mean to be a Catholic? What does it mean to be a Christian in the 21st century in the United States? It means being and forming, making missionary disciples. And so I think for us, a takeaway for us, be on the watch. You're right. We don't know yet what that means in our diocese, what this convocation will mean. I think it will mean an acceleration of things we're already doing and maybe a broadening. So you might see more and more hear the language of missionary discipleship. And yeah, I'd encourage you to pay attention.
And the whole point again is to enliven, to enrich, to deepen our relationship with Jesus Christ.
So that we can give him to others.
So that we can do it to others. Not just for us.
Not just for us.
It's to give it away.
One bishop said, before you go outward, you have to go inward. Mm. I can't give Jesus to other people if I don't know him myself.
Right.
So that's what this is about.
But it's not just about that. It's about that, but then it's the next step. Yeah. So that.
Missionary, it's both. Missionary, yep. Disciple.
Yeah. Good. Well, we're going to hear more. We'll stay tuned to this and appreciate giving us a summary this morning. Dr. Chris Bergold, thanks for being with us.
You bet.
Jane, just a little bit of time left this morning. I do want to mention again the Faith and Business Conference coming up, because it's such a great opportunity, and really for anyone around the diocese or the region.
So there's still time. There's about 3 weeks left. There's still time to find out about it and to get involved if you want.
I think if you just go to their website, cmbfsf.org, you'll find out all the details that you need to know. That's our time for Catholic Views this morning. Thanks for joining us each week. Please join us again next Sunday.